Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. You've hopefully been with us before, so you have some idea what we do, but I want to give you some ideas here also. Our goal is to bring you credible, valid information and insights about diverse members of our community. Central Coast Voices wants to address how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community and how we look at the long-term ramifications of change in our society. Sometimes the discussion is about what we're doing that has to do with lack of change in our society. That is not the case today. It's kind of tough I don't pick the title of the program. One of our producers does that. So I have to share with you, the title that was picked today was Accelerators, Incubators, and Startups, Oh My. And we'll go with that and we'll have a good time. There are many things that go under the radar at Cal Poly. A lot of them are visible to a lot of the community, but a lot of them also get far different looks at from society and what's going on around us. And today we're going to talk about some of the fascinating things going on at a thing called the Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, CIE. And their transformative program motivating students into resourceful, entrepreneurial, and innovative leadership roles. And I need to put it in here just so I don't forget, even though it is primarily a student-motivated project, it is not available only to students. We're going to make a very good attempt today to explain to you that if you have no connection with Cal Poly, but you have a connection with innovation and entrepreneurship in the community and you'd like to talk about that, that's indeed available as part of what we're going to talk about. They run programs like the Slow Hothouse Summer Accelerator. It's basically an entrepreneurship learning by doing project for Cal Poly. It assists entrepreneurs in following their dreams. It's really looking at an entrepreneurial environment and a way for students to look at things outside the box of education and looking at it more from innovation. With me today is Todd Nelson, who's the executive director for the Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship. Haley Pavone. Pavone. There's Pavone. Okay, it's Pavone. Okay. I'll put an accent over the E. Sorry about that. Anyway, she's the founder of Passion Footwear, and Matt Maxwell, who's the founder and CEO of Boltabout. So Haley and Matt are two innovators already doing things with what they've done with the Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship. And we're going to talk about what that is all about and what you may want to do to get involved in it and some things that they have going on. And I guess, Todd, why don't we start with you and get some idea of what in the world this is and why in the world you're doing it?
Cal Poly has a really strong learn by doing spirit. And as a result, there are a lot of really cool ideas that are coming out of the classrooms. And the founder of the CIE decided to create something that captures those ideas and allows students to follow up with those ideas after they graduate and create businesses around them. So he started the Accelerator Program. So the Accelerator Program is a 12-week summer-long program. We identify 8 to 10 companies that are coming out of Cal Poly. We give them $10,000 in seed funding, and then we put them through a 12-week business boot camp on steroids. It's kind of like Hogwarts for business people.
Hogwarts, okay. That's a good explanation. Go ahead.
Yeah, so okay. We get them from the business idea at the beginning of the summer and hopefully to a business venture that's fundable at the end of summer. It all culminates in a demo day, September 8th at the PAC on Cal Poly campus. And these companies will all pitch their ideas and what they've learned over the summer.
So they're going to pitch it to other innovators, but they're also going to pitch it to people who may be venture capitalists and sources of long-term support, both financially and maybe entrepreneurially for them.
Yeah, absolutely. A big part of the program is teaching them how to do their pitch and also how to raise money and what to do with that money. So we get them in contact with VCs throughout the whole summer, and then it's an ongoing process. Matt, you're probably still talking to VCs.
Yeah, every day it's all about continuing to foster the relationship so we could gather as much support as we can for our business.
Okay. Let me jump in a second before we get any further into this, because I realize I kind of messed up my own opening and forgot to remind folks that this is a call-in program. You're welcome to be part of the discussion. I encourage you, if you want to call in and be part of the discussion or have any questions, you do that early in the program. Sometimes it's frustrating when people call in the last few minutes and we just can't squeeze them in. The phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. Haley, I want to shift to you for a second, because when I looked at the information about this, my thought was that most of what this organization is focused on is technology and innovation, not just entrepreneurship. And you have a shoe company.
We do.
So,
yes.
So the concept of, okay, this isn't about technology. This isn't about software. In Matt's case, it's about bicycles, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But how in the world did footwear end up in this discussion in the first place?
Well, it's not just any regular old type of footwear. We're actually making huge innovative strides in the high heel industry, is what Passion Footwear's kind of mission is. We're creating convertible high heels. So basically, it's a standard stiletto shoe for women where the physical heel detaches from the shoe sole itself and folds down into a flat sandal. So yes, you're right. It's not software. You know, you're thinking, oh, a shoe, how can this be different? But we're thinking this could make a huge change in the lives of commuting women, or women that just like to wear heels for the style that they add to their outfit.
Okay. Are these – so is your innovation focused primarily on the manufacturing technology, the marketing of the product, or the awareness of the product, or all of the above, I realize?
Kind of all of the above. Okay. The biggest innovation is the actual differences in structure of the shoe, which does come into play in manufacturing. Obviously, it has a unique assembly process, but we've actually engineered and designed a new way of making a high heel, basically. I mean, it's not, you know, not every heel has a heel that intentionally disassembles from the shoe. So the technological advancement is actually in the design of the shoe sole itself.
I'm seldom at a loss for words to. It's like the concept of a convertible high heel, is fascinating. I'm wondering where that fits into. Well, this is San Luis Obispo. This is not a fashion center of the universe.
Fair enough.
But
yeah.
Okay, it's. I'm wondering, is it something that you're manufacturing locally? Are you in the innovation and development stages, or is this a product that's already on the market?
No, we're in the innovation and development stages. Actually, one of our biggest goals for the Summer Accelerator Program is to locate manufacturing. Unfortunately, shoe manufacturing is a very specific space that is not really present in San Luis Obispo, but we're starting to look into possibly facilities in California or New York, and also overseas as well. So that's one of the things we're hoping to wrap up throughout this summer.
And your desire is to actually manufacture them, or you want to actually be the conduit. You're not looking for someone who wants to, if you will, acquire the license to your design.
Not immediately, no. We, at first, our initial plans are to actually take this design to market and sell direct to consumer through a website that we're going to be setting up. Mm-hmm. So Passion Footwear will be its own brand and the exclusive brand for this kind of convertible shoe design.
Okay. I don't want anybody to feel like I'm picking on you, but I'm going to pick on you with Todd for a second. Because I want to. Somebody comes to you, and you're used to dealing mostly with technology and innovation, and mm-hmm. this is innovation, and they come to present to you a program that they want to have as part of your incubation process. Mm-hmm. Haley walks in and says, we are working on a new shoe design. How do you fit that into what you do, and where does that fit with what you were structured to do? Because this is not the first time that the hothouse has been in the part of the discussion on the program, and it seems like it's mostly been involved around technology more than consumer goods.
It's about a 50-50 split. In the last couple of years, we've had quite a few product-driven companies that aren't doing software. One of the important things to us is to be a center for all things that happen at Cal Poly. So it's all majors, not just engineers and not just business people. So we recruit people from all colleges. So our accelerator reflects all of Cal Poly and all of the talent coming out. So it can be a product. We have a food company that's in the accelerator this summer. It could be a software company. It could be an innovation like Matt brings to the market in electric bikes. So it can be just about any idea. The other thing is, we love great ideas, but more than great ideas, we love people with grit and passion and fortitude and all the things you need to be an entrepreneur. And those are the ideas we like to invest, or those are the people we like to invest in. More than a great idea, we like to invest in great people, and we have two of our greatest right here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Matt, you drove here on a bicycle. You rode here on a bicycle, an electric bicycle, as best I can tell. So what is the product and or the innovation that brought you to this table?
Yeah, so Boltabout was a really unique business to start because it didn't fall in line with the traditional innovation of a product or the development of an application. And so what we're doing at Boltabout, and our goal every day we think about this, is we are doing our best to empower our customers with fast, fun, and sustainable transportation by leasing electric bikes on a month-to-month basis. And that's the core business that we focus on at Boltabout.
Okay. So you're not the builder of the bicycle, and it's not your bicycle. Well, I'm sorry, the design is not your bicycle. It's the way of utilizing the bicycle.
Right. And that's what makes our business so unique is – we're first a financial innovation of a company, and then we also focus a lot on sales and marketing. So we didn't spend hundreds of hours on the computer designing and manufacturing our own electric bike. What we did is we spent hours on the computer modeling out different financial cash flows and all sorts of different other metrics that we were going to track, and we used those to see if this business would be viable.
And okay. So what's different about what you're doing than, well, example, I can go to San Francisco, hundreds of places within San Francisco, I can basically put a credit card or a debit card in a slot and basically get a bicycle out of a lock rack, ride it around for a set period of time or an infinite period of time, lock it back up, and get charged for the time I had the bicycle. What are you doing that's different than what's already being done with that kind of situation?
Yeah, we love the idea of the sharing economy when it comes to bicycles because it helps, you know, the whole entire country achieve what our mission is. But after trying bike share programs, for example, I was just in Columbus, Ohio, and I signed up for the whole weekend to get the bike share. But the issue that we found with it is that we'd get the bike after we were done at our restaurant for food, and we'd ride over to the OSU campus, but there were no places to put the bike. So then we had to pull out our phone, find the nearest hub, which was half a mile away, ride back where we just passed, then lock up the bike, and then walk for 10 or 15 minutes to the campus. It was challenging. And so what we found is that the bike sharing is great in a jam-packed city like San Francisco. When you try and do that in some place like San Luis Obispo, it's just not feasible because the amount of different bike stations you'd have to make it a viable program is not financially viable. So instead, we give our customers their very own electric bike that goes wherever they go that they don't have to share with anyone. So it's always where they need it to be.
How long do they keep the bike for? What's the shortest period of time someone could rent a bike for with this program?
Yeah, most of our customers stick around for us for a long time. Some customers want to try out the bike, and so they sign up for the first month, and a few days later they realize, you know, based on how many things I have to carry with me to work, the bike isn't the best transportation option. So we've had maybe two or three customers quit after the first week, and we just refunded all their money back because it wasn't the best fit. Other customers have been with us since we did our very first pilot program about a year and a half ago.
And is it regional driven? And there, so this is a program that you have to already be set up in a given community to work, or if you're set up in San Luis Obispo and I happen to live in Salinas, but there's nobody in Salinas that's specifically servicing your company, can I get a bicycle and have it in Salinas?
Yeah, it's okay. Actually great. Originally, we were just thinking only folks in San Luis Obispo would get the bike. Mm-hmm. But after we put some ads out, we had a customer drive to SLO all the way from Fresno to get a bike. He's been with us for a year. We had another customer who is moving to Washington. She picked up the bike from us at the Hot House downtown in San Luis Obispo, and she just rode it around Washington. and it was great. All we do is we just provide them maintenance credits because maintenance is included in the monthly fee, and the bikes work out perfect for them. So we don't always need a hub where we're servicing, but it's the best approach for the customer experience.
Okay. This is fascinating innovation. I want to back up to let's pre the start of both of your projects. Haley, when you started looking at this idea, where in the world did CIE fit into you having to be part of this? I mean, people, I don't want to ridicule CIE, and that's not what I'm trying to do, but people are innovating on their own all the time.
Sure.
So what is about this that makes this an effective environment to really build on your project?
Definitely. Well, I mean, I think it's safe to say Passion Footwear would not be where we are today without the help of the CIE. The resources that we get as members of the program are absolutely incredible. We have access to, for my company specifically, one of the most helpful resources has been access to a mentor database. I mean, we've been able to talk to patent attorneys, get advice from them, you know, different lawyers for incorporation, several shoe designers who were actually, you know, CEOs of their own large footwear companies to give us advice on how to move through this process. We just were able to talk to people that have the information that we as students are lacking. And so it's a very attractive resource for us in that sense.
Okay. So Todd, person walks in the door, one of these two people, yeah, or a new person walks in the door and basically just says, what can you do for me? Now, I realize you want people who aren't looking at this from a standpoint of what can you do for me? This is a partnership. But someone who walks in that has already done some innovation on their product, somebody who walks in and has this spark in their head that, you know, it's I'll give you an abstract one because it's obviously something that was worked out years ago. We shifted as a society from incandescent light bulbs to LEDs drastically about 5 to 7 years ago. If you had told the average person even 10, 15 years ago that light-emitting diodes would be an effective way to put taillights on your car, light in your flashlight, a low-voltage draw in your RV or any number of places – people might have thought, it's old technology. LEDs have been around for, 40-plus years? Mm-hmm. I'm showing my age. Probably 50-plus years. But they were not seen as an innovative part of our society the way they have just exploded recently. Mm-hmm. So if someone walks in with an idea like that, what are the first questions maybe you don't ask them the questions, but you ask them to think about what questions they need to get answered first. But I'm walking in and all I know is I've got a light emitting diode that I really think I can turn into taillights on a car.
Well, first thing I think we'd ask is, do you have a product market fit? Have you talked to customers? Is there someone out there that values your product? If you haven't done that work, we really can't help you, but we can help you do that work. We can't do it for you, but we can give you the tools you need to go out there, find out who your customer is, talk to your customer, ask the right questions so you get the good data. Turn that data into an assumption that there is a market out there, and then you can go raise money on that assumption and bring your product to market. We have several different resources that will help you do that. We do have the Summer Accelerator. We have a 2-year incubator program after the accelerator, and we've just opened that incubator program up to any startup in the community. You don't have to be a Cal Poly student or graduate anymore to be in our incubator program. We actually just yesterday onboarded 3 new companies from the community of San Luis Obispo that are coming in down to the hothouse and setting up shop and running their startups there. We also have a co-working program. Anyone in the community can come in. They give us a monthly stipend or monthly rent. They get a desk, a chair. They get free Wi-Fi, free printing, and free coffee. So there's a lot of – yeah, that's going to bankrupt us. So there's a sort of an entrepreneurial ecosystem going on in the hothouse. We also run the Small Business Development Center. So both these people are members of the SBDC. As an SBDC client, you have access to all the resources you need to start a business in San Luis Obispo.
Okay. I don't, obviously don't want you to have to violate any confidentialities, but can you share with us who the three organizations are that have approached you recently?
Yeah, one is Stoltech. They're creating a very innovative, comprehensive drone motor, and they're also looking at creating other drone parts. One of them is she's creating a sort of a Carillon program for students. Mm-hmm. It's really innovative. It's really exciting. And I'm going to blank on the third. What's that?
It's Motoroso.
Oh, Motoroso. Yes. Sorry, Alex. I hope you're not listening. Motoroso, which is a market site for car enthusiasts. It's kind of like Houzz for people that love cars. They're all really exciting people, exciting ideas, and we're excited about the opportunity to have them be a part of our ecosystem.
Okay. So what do you ask people to do first when they walk in the door?
Tell me what your idea is and get to know them. Like I said, we love great ideas, but we really love great people.
Do you have, like the two entrepreneurs we have here, is there a round table of people that, I mean we can, for lack of a better word, a group, support group that that can be candid with people? Because I suspect there are people who walk in the door, and what you would really like to say to them is, this is very interesting. Please don't give up your day job. that's a tough one for people. Mm-hmm. How do you convey to someone the difference between this looks like there are some possibilities here we'd like to work with you on, and you need to go back to square one because mm-hmm. you're here too early?
Yeah, I try not to presume on the idea, but I do encourage them to do the work necessary to find that product market fit, to find their customer. I don't know what the best next idea is going to be. I can't really judge it. But if someone comes in and they can prove to us that they've done the work necessary to prove that they found their market, they've found those early customers that are going to put value on what it is they're creating, that's up to them. And if they've done that, we're happy to have them in the hothouse.
Yeah. We remind folks, this is a discussion about a wonderful program at Cal Poly dealing with innovation and entrepreneurship, and it's available not only to students but to non-students also. If you want to be part of this discussion or you just have a simple question for these folks, give us a call. The phone number is 805-781-3875. This is Community Public Radio, and you're part of the community as these folks are part of the community. And if you want to be part of the discussion, please just jump in. Okay, Haley, let me back up. Can you give us a reasonably simple and understandable to the layperson timeline for the process, where you got from, where was day one on this, and what did you do through the CIE program to really bring all this together?
Sure. So I can talk a little bit about how I came up with the idea. It's kind of an interesting story. So I'm in Alpha Chi Omega here at Cal Poly, and I was at my sorority spring formal last spring, and I'm wearing these crazy 6-inch high heels, trying to dance. It's not working out super well, so I end up taking off my shoes, and I'm just dancing barefoot on the dance floor. The majority of the girls present were doing the exact same thing as me, but unfortunately, one of my fellow sorority sisters who still had stilettos on accidentally stepped on my foot, and I was actually impaled by a stiletto. So it's kind of a running joke. They say in entrepreneurship—
There's a reason why they call those shoes stilettos.
Right. Okay. Right. Well, they say in entrepreneurship to find a pain point, and I definitely found a pain point in that moment. So I was sitting there tending to my wound, and I'm looking around. Notice that everybody's pretty much barefoot, and I'm thinking, the best case scenario for these girls is they're going to get home and their feet are going to be filthy. I mean, dirt blackened, you're running around on grass and dirt barefoot. That's not great. And apparently the worst case scenario, people could get impaled. So, this is not a great solution. And I started thinking high heel pain is a big problem for women all over the place. It's not just dancing out at events. It's walking to work every day or, just going out with friends. And it occurred to me that I started researching it more over the summer and found that 50% of women wear high heels on a regular basis, but 71% of them say that the high heels hurt, but they wear them anyway. So I started thinking, okay. We need a solution to this. And that's where the idea for an adaptable heel kind of was born.
Okay.
In the fall of this year, I joined the Hatchery program. I don't think Todd mentioned that, but that's one of the other CIE programs that's run directly through Cal Poly. It's kind of the junior accelerator program, I would say.
Yeah.
Throughout that program, I did a lot of business development, brought on my co-founder, Tyler Unbehand, who is industrial technology at Cal Poly. The two of us came up with the initial shoe design, which we were able to 3D print also on campus at the CIE's sandbox facility, which is accessible, I think, just to students. Do they have community access?
Yeah.
So we were able to 3D print an actual functioning adaptable shoe, which was great. We presented at the elevator pitch competition on campus and were lucky to take home the Judge's Choice and Audience Choice awards at that competition, and then went on to compete in Innovation Quest and took home first place from that as well. So throughout all of this, we were able to gain some bootstrapping funding that enabled us to continue doing development and then get into the accelerator this summer, where we're really getting into the locating manufacturing, refining the design, and filing for a patent using mentor resources that we have access to.
How, I'm glad you said filing for a patent, because one of my first thoughts with this is, as you look at innovation and ways to market your innovation, you have to also look at ways to protect your innovation.
Definitely.
It's something that may take you a number of years to get up and running. Somebody else who's looking at it that may either A, already be in the shoe business, or be an incredibly well-funded venture capital organization might be stealing your idea, for lack of, I can't think of a better word than steal. Stealing your idea before there's a chance for you to really protect it. So what about this program, for all three of you, what about this program helps you make sure that you can use the innovation available to you and the resources available, and you're not constantly looking over your shoulder and saying, okay, who just ran to the patent office before I did?
Well, I think we're very lucky in the sense that CIE is a really welcoming and supportive community. My co-founder and I have never felt like, you know, we're in danger in CIE in any way. I also know a lot of the mentors, I think, sign NDA agreements to not talk about the innovations that are going on within the space. So we have that kind of protection as well.
And one other great thing is, different lawyers will make themselves available for free and open office hours through the SBDC, which is located in the hothouse downtown. There's other mentors to teams who are patent attorneys. And one of my friends at Base Rock, they're on Kickstarter Live right now, their mentor helped them develop their patent, which would have cost, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, and all these mentors that are also lawyers that help the CIE make all these protection strategies much more affordable to the teams.
Mm-hmm. So, do you, Todd, do you give people a checklist before they, as they walk in the door, and say, these are the things that you need to have in order before this process is going to work for anybody?
I want to say absolutely yes, and also no, we don't. It's not a checklist, but there's a bunch of things that you need to do in order to start a company. And it does start with customer development. It does start with finding a problem and then finding that solution and then talking to your customers to see if they value your solution. And then there's a whole slew of things that follow after that. IP protection, how to build a website, how to market. You know, the list just goes on and on and on. However, you never check off customer development and then leave it behind you. You're constantly doing it. You do it through the life of your company.
Yeah. Can you share with us some of the other companies that you – because I guess there's over 100 that you've worked with locally that are – some of them are student people who were in this in the early process. Other ones are non-student ones.
I just want to go back just for a minute and talk about the elevator pitch contest, which Haley won this year. We started looking at our statistics over the last 7 years. Every single winner of the elevator pitch contest has gone on to form a business that exists today.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Isn't that pretty incredible?
Oh, that's good to know.
And 55% of the winners of the IQ Innovation Quest contest have functioning businesses today. So there's a whole variety of them. We have several in the hothouse right now. Matt mentioned Base Rock. I think we should give them a shout out since they are running a campaign on Kickstarter. But Matt, why don't you describe what Base Rock is?
Yeah, Base Rock is awesome. So what they do is they take the experience of going to a music festival or a live concert and make it available to you even when you aren't near the front of the stage. So when you're right near the front where all the speakers are, you could feel the bass just hit your body. You could physically feel that music. But when you're standing halfway back in the arena or in the very rear in the nosebleed seats, you can't feel anything. So what they do is their product listens to the music, and it's a backpack you wear on your back. And they'll vibrate the bass frequencies on your body so you could physically feel the music like you would if you were right front center stage. It's awesome.
Fascinating. Okay. Can you, is part of that, can we get somebody who will also get people to sit down that are blocking your view? Okay.
It's me. That'll be the next
step. Yeah, my big complaint at music events. Yeah.
Actually, we have a company called Observer. Is VR, their virtual reality. In virtual reality, you could literally create a concert venue where you're the only person in the concert hall. But they're doing something different. They've built a platform to stream live video into a 3D environment. And then they wanted to do some analytics for that with their early customers. And they discovered there is no virtual reality analytics going on out there at all. So they're creating their own analytics platform, not only for virtual reality, but in the virtual reality.
Okay. So that's a couple of examples. Mm-hmm. Is there, and I'm not sure if any of those examples that were started not by students, because there's part of your program that's available to the non-student population. And where the break between those two things are is I'm not clear about, so you may want to sort that out for us.
So we just started the community incubator program. Okay. So like I said, yesterday our first three came on board. However, the SBDC has been serving clients for 5 or 6 years now. And clients of the SBDC that aren't Cal Poly students have gone on to some great success. I'm going to forget the name of them, but they created a product. It's a young woman. She's only 16. She created a product that allows you to give yourself a back massage, essentially. She pitched that product on.
That's actually made the media quite a bit around.
Yes, yeah. She pitched it on Shark Tank, got funding from Mark Cuban. She's now through one of our mentors of the SBDC consultants, was able to get into Walmart. So I think she just bought a horse ranch recently. She's gone on to great success. There's countless examples of people that have come in, used the SBDC services, and gone on to create successful businesses.
Okay, so the summer program is not the only program. That's a starter program, but that's for Cal Poly students who don't have a summer job and B should be doing something constructive.
Oh, believe me,
time.
It's a summer job.
It's a summer job.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. These guys have given up their summer and they're working harder probably than any other graduates at Cal Poly. It's pretty brutal. These guys put in. I mean, what do you guys work at, 80 hours a week?
Yeah. Did you come in on 4th of July? There are a bunch of people still working.
We did not. We
4th.
Worked from home, but yeah, we
still,
we still had to work. Yeah,
24/7.
Okay. Well, Matt, give me some idea of what you've talked about, what the motivation for the product was. How did the process work? What was kind of your checklist for it?
Yeah. So this isn't the first company that I started. So kind of going into Boltabout, I had not a clear idea, but I knew what not to do, and I knew that I shouldn't just go and create the service and then hope everyone signs up.
We're not going to let you off the hook. You can't say that without fessing up. What was the first business, and did you proceed on because it was successful or because it's like, I'm not doing this again?
Yeah, the first real business is called Polymax, and the reason Boltabout started was because with the success of Polymax, as our revenue started growing incredibly fast, I didn't feel like we were creating serious and substantial value for the community and the environment. If anything, the business was creating negative externalities. So the motivation for Boltabout was a triple bottom line approach of focusing on our customers and stakeholders, the environment, and the financial success of the business.
Okay. So when you started Boltabout and you saw there was a need there, what about it? I mean, I don't want to sound flip with this, but the bicycles already existed. Okay. The ability to say, hey, gee, we're going to come up with a way to do a long-term rental of a bicycle. Hertz was doing it with cars long before you started doing about bicycles. I'm wondering how you evolve from And again, I'm trying not to be flip about it. A product that to some extent anyone might say, oh, yeah, a rental bicycle, what is the big deal here? To basically make it more of a product and an environment for your product where people are saying, this is something I can't get anyplace else, or I can't get it effectively anyplace else.
Yeah, and we saw the same thing. The way the business started was I rode my first electric bike in Avila Beach as a test ride, and I went back to the shop, and I was like, I'm going to buy this right now. But the bike was way out of my price range. It was about $3,500 for an electric bike, way too much money. Mm-hmm. So what we realized is that if we figured out a way to finance the electric bike acquisition process, provide great service as a component of the lease, like we provide free maintenance, you get a flat tire, we'll replace it for free. Mm-hmm. And what we also found is that a lot of people didn't know about the value electric bikes provide. The perception of electric bikes was something ugly that's hard to ride and that no one, you know, really embraces. But over time, by promoting our business, we've broken down that perception and showed people how cool an electric bike is. All you do is you twist the throttle back, pedaling's totally optional, and you go over 20 miles an hour without pedaling. It's awesome.
Sometimes innovation comes from not just a new idea, but applying an existing business model to a different industry. It's how Airbnb came about. It's how Uber came about. So what Matt has done is taken an old business model, which is rental cars, and applied that to the electric bike industry. And that's where his great innovation has come through.
Okay. So financing a project like this, obviously, to work effectively, you've got to be able to talk about, you couldn't buy a $3,500 bicycle, and you now have to find a funding source for how many $3,500 bicycles?
150.
Okay. Okay. that translates into over $250,000. Yeah.
It's a lot of money in bikes we have. And that was, it's the biggest barrier to entry for someone to compete with us. Mm-hmm. And what we've also found is the business only works when you're at scale in a city. So it's not like we could buy 30 electric bikes because that's more affordable and make this business successful. We have to get to 300 electric bikes leased out and slow after 2 years of launching to make this business a success. And that was one of the primary motivations for joining the Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, was to get assistance from people who've raised money successfully in the past to help coach us on what we need to do that successfully, create a successful business, and generate great returns for our investors. And another really cool thing that we've been working on is we've been working with our bike manufacturer, Prodeco Tech. They're based in Florida. They're one of the largest e-bike manufacturers in the U.S. And we're creating awesome relationships with them. And we're really excited to promote the Boltabout and Prodeco Tech brand together across the country in the coming years with some really cool projects we're working on together right now.
So you may be able to work with them as a licensee of Boltabout to basically offer your product model and maybe your trademark name to other companies or other organizations that want to put it together.
Yeah, more or less. The details of the deal right now aren't public quite yet, but we're developing a system where the Boltabout and Prodeco Tech brand can get in hundreds of different college towns, hundreds of different cities across the United States to help people switch from cars to electric bikes as their primary mode of transportation. And in the process, we're all helping the environment, our customers' happiness. It's a much better feeling. It's exhilarating to be on an electric bike in the sunshine during the summer. So it's a win-win-win for everyone.
As you're saying that, I have to tell you, I was in Rovinj, Croatia, on a bicycle at a state park last year. I had to remind myself that it had been a long time since I'd done a lot of extensive bicycle riding, and I would have preferred to have an electric bicycle.
So. You got it. Okay. Pedal when you want, yeah, throttle when you don't.
That sounds very good. Yeah, that works out. Well, Haley, you know, Matt had the advantage, if you will, that the technology already existed. For lack of a better way of putting it, it's you have a marketing company. You're marketing a product for a technology that's already available and a conduit to basically make it available. You're going to build shoes from scratch.
Yes.
So what is the next step for you?
The next step for us, we've finished up refining our second round of prototypes. So we're going to be taking those into testing. The next big step is going to be locating a manufacturing facility to help us.
Back up. How do you prototype a shoe?
Well, to date, we've been using 3D printing technology. Has been amazing for us. Like I said, my CTO, Tyler, is very skilled. And we also have an engineer on our team, Seiji. They've been drawing
out. What medium do you use for the 3D printing?
The files come out of CAD, and then we transfer them into a 3D printer. Like I said, the Innovation Sandbox is the facility we've been using thus far.
So you're still dealing with a heat-sensitive plastic material of some kind to do this.
Yes. Okay. The next big step, like I was saying, is we need to find a manufacturing partner willing to make wearable samples for us out of the actual shoe material.
I really didn't know. 3D printing has progressed so drastically. I didn't really know if there was somebody who had actually perfected 3D printing that involved fabric or thread. So I was just curious.
That's accessible to us at this point, at least.
Oh, it does exist, though?
I've heard that there's some of that starting to come into play, but... Yeah, unfortunately not at a range that a startup can achieve at this point.
So in Matt's case, he's able to start in one community on a small scale.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming you are not going to be able to produce shoes until you have a manufacturer lined up that's prepared to produce at least tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of shoes in order to make it even feasible to do so.
Yeah, it's a big inventory management question for sure. We're actually planning on initially launching through a Kickstarter campaign. The exact launch date on that is still tentative, but we're thinking that'll be the best route just so that we have upfront cash for that first inventory order. Obviously, with any kind of product-based business, that's one of the bigger challenges to manage.
The summer program... How is that different than the long-term program? Do you have people who do just the summer program and then as kind of a test bed for something, or is that for everybody? That's the start of a long-term project.
Absolutely, it's the beginning, and not everyone makes it. It's an accelerator. Sometimes you accelerate your failure as well. It's better to find out after 5 weeks that you don't have a product or you don't have a market before you borrow against your house or take out a loan or something like that. You accelerate yourself to failure. So we do have, we consider sometimes a team that comes in, a company that comes in and doesn't get to the end. That's a success in some ways too, because they haven't wasted any time chasing an empty dream. But most people follow up by creating a company, and that's why we have the incubator program. It's sort of a soft business landing after you get through the accelerator. You come into the incubator program. It's 2 years. You start out by paying a very low rent for your space, and we double the rent every 6 months. So it's sort of up the pressure. So after about a year or so, you have to think, oh, wow, I'm paying some pretty serious rent here. Do I have a business that I can monetize and make a living from?
So we have the innovators and the entrepreneurs, and we have you on the other side of the table. Who else is in the room for this project?
Well, every accelerator team is paired with a lead mentor. And this year we're doing, every team gets two mentors. These are people with industry knowledge for each company. These are people that can really help you open doors to get the resources you need. We also have all of our SBDC consultants as well. Also, everyone on the staff at the CIE is a seasoned entrepreneur. We all have worked for startups in our past, including our faculty members. The woman who runs the accelerator program is a local serial entrepreneur. She was a lead mentor a couple years ago, and her company failed the fastest. Like, they were done in like 5 or 6 weeks, and that's when I knew that she was the person I needed to come on and run our incubator or run our accelerator program.
So her only business failed in 5 weeks?
No, she was a mentor for an accelerated business that they threw in the towel after about 5 or 6 weeks because they didn't have anything. They didn't have a product market fit.
So, well, let's back up then. Who did both of you have for your mentors, and what did they bring to the mix that you and your co-founders didn't bring to the mix in the first place.
Yeah, we were paired with Lucia Cleveland. She was the founder of Spice Hunter.
I know her well. Okay.
I didn't even realize, but I have Spice Hunter spices in my spice rack. And it was just really cool to be paired with Lucia, where she did everything. She started her business with her savings, grew it about 100% year over year into a multi-million dollar business that she sold. And she dedicated her summer in the past year just to make Bolt About successful. If we have an issue, I call her immediately. We're sitting at a lunch table, and she's offering all the connections she has, all the expertise to help us become successful. And there's hundreds of people just like Lucia with the vast network from the CIE that we could get assistance from.
Yeah, she started in her garage in about 1980. I actually went to a SCORE program, basically a retired senior volunteer information thing for business people, about the same time she was starting in her garage. And I have to – she did a lot better successfully with her business than I did with mine, but that's another issue. But that was a wonderful resource to have, yeah. Anyway, what type of things did she – throw out there for you that were, please pay attention to this,
yeah,
landmarks?
The most interesting thing I found about the mentor network after joining the CIE is how controversial all the advice is. So, for example,
that's the kind of radio program we want. We have a few minutes. Keep going.
Yeah, being very honest here. Lucia will tell me one thing, and then I'll talk with another mentor, maybe a lawyer. He'll tell me something else. And then I'll call my dad, who's a successful businessman, and he'll tell me something else. Then my opinion is vastly different. So, for example, Lucia, I'm sure we got into a couple of, you know, moderate arguments Lucia and I did over summer about the minimum lease term of the electric bikes. My philosophy was we only want very, very happy customers to have our bikes. They don't like it, give it back. We'll give them a full refund. She was trying to protect us because she perhaps had a better perception of the real world and was
an expendable product.
Exactly. And she was advocating for a minimum of a 6-month lease duration. And, you know, we took her advice very, very seriously and interviewed over 100 different potential customers to figure out what we thought the best decision was by the data. And so far, we've done the month-to-month, no commitment necessary. But there's been several times with problematic customers where I wished I took Lucia's advice. But you got to listen, you know, test that possible assumption. And as the business owner, you've got to make the decision that you think is right.
There's an actual phrase for it. I just learned it's called mentor whiplash.
That sounds pretty accurate. Yeah.
So they have so many people talking to them, especially during the accelerator. But it's their job as founders, as business owners, to sort through all the advice and pick what is best for you and your business, because you do know your business better than anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, Haley, who was your mentor and what did they help bring to the table for you?
Well, we have two mentors, and we're actually currently in the accelerator. So we're only about, as of tomorrow, 3 weeks into the program. So we're pretty early in our mentor relationship. But
I got to back up. You're only you do have an up and running website. I looked at it today.
We do, okay. Yes.
It's
yes.
A very nice website.
Oh, thank you. But yeah, only 3 weeks into the accelerator. So we just got paired with these mentors. We have Laura Jokowski. I feel that I always mess up her last name, but she's very high up in the textile group, which runs Just Fab Shoe Company as well as Fabletics. So she has a lot of fashion industry experience. And then our other mentor is Mike Pugh at Marketect, who has a lot of just business consulting experience as well.
Okay. So what did they shake you up with?
So far,
what are they shaking you up with?
So far, it's a lot of brainstorming about how to get this product manufactured, different approaches to take. We were talking about trying to do full-scale 3D printing for a while, but it's looking like that might not pan out. Currently, it's just been kind of roundtable discussions about how we're going to solve that manufacturing question for our company.
Okay. So, Todd, back to you. Okay.
Yes.
What mentor do you work with that helps you figure out how to make this better for your clientele? I mean, these are your clients, for lack of a better way of putting it.
Absolutely. Well, I have to say the learning process goes both ways. I learn so much on a daily basis from these young entrepreneurs. Every year I learn more. I learn more about what it takes to start a business. So I learn from them. They're really critical. I spend a lot of time and talk to them. I also have an incredible staff. One of my philosophies in business has always been you hire better than you. A's tend to hire B's, B's tend to hire C's, end up with a company full of D's. I have hired everyone in our staff is better than me. They're really smart, passionate people, and they bring incredible resources to the table. And also I want to shout out for the co-founder, John York. He started this program several years ago. He built something amazing where nothing existed before. His name is John York, and this organization wouldn't exist without the blood, sweat, and tears he put into it starting about 6-7 years ago.
Yeah. Is any of what you're doing – I mean, we're looking at mostly technology here. Or, well, I don't know. Shoes are not technology, but I realize we're looking at tangible goods at some point. A rentable or leasable bicycle, a wearable pair of shoes in this case. Is anybody else at Cal Poly looking at, gee, there are other ways to look at this process and other ways to consider fitting this into the mold of Cal Poly's learn by doing beyond this? I mean, is anybody in the chemistry department looking at ways to do better innovation in science through those kind of things at Cal Poly?
Yeah, absolutely. Cal Poly is a very innovative school. But we also think entrepreneurship belongs pretty much in every classroom and in every college. We do a lot for outreach, not only to find the students that are interested in entrepreneurship, but to find the teachers that are passionate about it as well. Every year we bring on 3 what we call faculty fellows. We give them a stipend, and their mission is to incorporate entrepreneurship into their classroom or their college or sort of seed entrepreneurship on campus. We do 3 a year. They serve for 3 years. So at any given time, we have 12 professors at Cal Poly that are spreading the word of entrepreneurship. We also just launched the entrepreneurship minor this year. So any student at Cal Poly can take entrepreneurship. You don't have to be a business major. So it's been really successful.
Okay. As I historically do on the show every week, I try and give my guests a chance to have more of the last word than I've given them for the last hour. So we have a little bit of time. Haley, I want to start with you. And again, for people who are listening to the show and trying to get a better understanding of what you're doing and why you're doing it and how this all fits together, what do you want to make sure – what is your long elevator speech about CIE and what you're doing that you want people to be aware of?
About CIE and what we're doing?
Yeah.
So I'll start out with the CIE. Basically, if you are someone out there who has an idea that you want to turn into a viable business, CIE and SBDC are the two best ways in San Luis Obispo, in my opinion, to get started with that. I know, like I've said, my company would not be where we are today without the support we've received through those programs. So highly recommend it. Would recommend to a friend, as they say. And then as far as passion footwear, if you're a woman or I guess a man, we've taken some flack. Apparently there's some high heel enthusiasts out there who are men. And you're tired of the pain and inconvenience associated with wearing high heels, please check us out at passionfootwear.com. We're also on Facebook and Instagram, and we're going to be posting regularly with updates on our expected launch date. So we're looking forward to getting some shoes on your feet.
The there's an awareness program put on through the Women's Resource Center in San Luis County, I believe that's who puts it on, and walk a mile in my shoes every
year.
Okay. So I think there may be some men looking for some ways to make that a little bit more addressable.
They'd like some passions. Yeah. Maybe we'll have to have to pair up with them in the future.
Could be. Okay. Matt.
Yeah. And thanks a lot for having us on the show today. I'm just so incredibly grateful of all the support we've received to make Bolt About an actual business. It started with 2 bikes, which turned into 12 throughout the summer months, which all of a sudden turned into 150 really happy customers. So if there's any Bolt About customers listening today, we really appreciate your support of our business. And, you know, a few of the benefits that we didn't have a chance to talk about for a lot of our business commuter customers, I always love talking with our customers who use it to get to work, because the stories I hear is you know, Matt, I used to love riding my bike to work when I was young, but now I can't rely on myself physically, maybe because I have arthritis or maybe a hurt knee. Or, you know, Matt, I don't want to be all sweaty by the time I get to work. And Boltabout has changed that for me. I finally get to get back on the bike that I love. And this extends to people who are trying to get fit. One of our customers, in the first 3 days, he told us he lost 7 pounds. And just last week, he arrived early to his maintenance appointment and took my co-founder, Tavin, and I out to Giuseppe's for lunch. And he was sharing with us that he lost 50 pounds on the electric bike in the past 3 months by changing his lifestyle from a very sedentary lifestyle to active lifestyle that was facilitated by the bike. So if riding an electric bike is something that's interesting to you, all you have to do is go to our website, boltabout.com. All the info's there. You could try out a bike for free, cancel anytime. There's no long-term commitment. And lastly, I just really quickly wanted to thank a few of my mentors, Lucia, who we talked about, and Jim Fenwick, who's been an instrumental coach to me personally and to my business. He's helped me in more ways that I can even understand. All the investors we've gotten through the CIE, and most importantly, our customers. That's what really keeps us going.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, Todd, you get the last word.
Oh, boy.
Okay. It's your program. It's your baby. Okay.
Thank you very much for having us here and allowing us to talk about our babies. I want to thank you too as well, Haley and Matt. Being this incredibly brave for you to do this journey and being a part of this journey, I'm proud to be a part of this journey with you guys. So the passion you guys put into this and the hard work on this very difficult path you chose, it really inspires us. And I want anyone who's listening that has any interest in this at all, we are located in downtown SLO. We're not on the Cal Poly campus. We do a lot on campus, but during the summer we're downtown. We're right above the Ross store in downtown Hegera, on Hegera. We have 15,000 square feet.
The former home of Oddworld.
Yes, we are in our Oddworld space. We have an open door policy. Come by, help out, roll your sleeves up, get your hands dirty, and help us start some businesses in San Luis Obispo.
Okay. What do you have coming up again on September 8th?
Oh, September 8th is our demo day. Okay. That'll be at the PAC, on the main stage at the PAC on campus. It's open to the community. It's open to any investors, faculty, and community members that want to come hear these amazing founders pitch their company ideas.
Okay. Terrific. Thank you very much. It's a wonderful program. I'm glad that you're doing this. I'm glad that it's available to people. We obviously have two what I would consider success stories, one in the very early stages, one in the later stages, but it's actually out there doing it. You have customers on the road in San Luis County and people coming from out of the area to do that. That's terrific. This has been Central Coast Voices. I'm glad you're with us, and thank you for being part of the program today. If you haven't remembered this by now, is a production of Action for Healthy Communities, a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. Action for Healthy Communities puts out a report called Vital Signs every 3 years. The latest report came out in December of last year, and you may want to look at that at actionslo.org. Gives you some trending information on the Central Coast. Central Coast Voices is, of course, sponsored also by in collaboration with KCBX. We thank them for giving us the opportunity to be here with them. The program is underwritten by a grant from Joan Gellert Sargent. Chris Kington Barker will be with you next week. Her program is not currently finalized for next week, but she'll of course be with you with an interesting topic. Sometimes we as guests even get surprised at the last minute with what we get to talk about, so stick around for Chris Kington Barker's program next week. We want to also thank Joan Gellert Sargent for underwriting the program. You can get a hold of us at voices@kcbx.org. You can also call us at 543-2323. Thank you today to my guests Todd Nelson, Hallie Pavoni, and Matt Maxwell, and this has been Central Coast Voices. Coming up next is This American Life, one of my very favorite programs. Please get involved in your community, either doing this or a project like we've had on today, and join us again. This has been Central Coast Voices.